Was Vaemond right? Did he deserve to be named heir of Driftmark?
Was the warm moment between Alicent and Rhaenyra real or an act?
Should King Viserys' funeral be a closed casket or a burned casket and the ashes spread out to sea hundreds of miles from the coast where no one will ever come across it?
All those questions and more will be answered on this week's episode of The Joffrey Podcast.
I've been very busy. Many important matters require King's attention.
I'm King now. King now.
I am King.
Kiss it again.
Your fingers or your
King.
Tongue.
King.
Fingers.
Discuss
your battle plan.
He's one. But
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the King.
I'm telling mother.
My name's Bubba, and with me as always is
Catfish.
Catfish, we're going to be breaking down season one, episode 8, The Lord of the Tides. Not the Prince of Tides. Barbra Streisand, you stay off this episode. We're talking about House of the Dragon season one. We're going to be playing our match games. We're going to answer those three questions, and we're going to get to some great, as we do every week, we're going to get to some great listener feedback. But we got to start off with your rating out of 10 for episode 8.
Bubba, I'm giving episode 8, coincidentally, 8 out of 10, what I like to call double Vs.
Double Vs?
Yeah, vivisected Vaemonds. That is when someone asks for the tongue and someone else says, oh, do you want to see it fully? Here's what it looks like when you bifurcate the head.
Ouch.
I'm more up on this episode, mostly just because of what it represents for the future. I love the scenes where people are talking and sort of threatening each other, etc. But in the last episode, the kid said the next generation aren't going to play that way.
Oh, boy.
And we saw it again tonight. The next generation is not going to play that way. We're going to have some strong words for you, if you know what I mean. I am all here for it. I'm ready for these adult-ish characters to go. Viserys is, this all feels like preamble.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Hopeful there's no more time jumps. I can no longer keep track of how many kids everybody's had. At one point, we had a match game question asking about, you know, what Rhaenyra's next children were going to look like because she was pregnant with Daemon's baby. Turns out if we just waited 10 minutes, we would have discovered she's already had a couple babies with Daemon. I can't keep track. She's had like 12 kids already. So I am just excited because it feels like everything's going to come out into the open now. I'm not quite sure why it didn't before because Viserys is so weak. I mean, we saw somehow he was still able to come on and stagger to the throne and have people listen to him in this episode. Why anybody ever listened to him now is beyond me, but we're done with the talking. Now it's going to be action. And so because of that, I am all for these kids trash talking each other.
Catfish, you wonder if there's going to be another time jump. Nope. What's going to be left of Viserys if there's another time jump? I mean, it's going to be this, you know, this kind of, you know, maybe a skeleton where some of it's already turned to dust. How many time jumps can we have?
For his sake, hopefully dead.
Hey, I'm going to give this episode not as high as you are, Catfish. All right, feel Bubba. Terrible doing this, but I'm only going to give this 7 double L's out of 10.
Wait, double L's?
Lacking Larys. Where was Larys? Where was my wonderful scheming? I love backstabbing, or if you're Aemond, front stabbing as you toast to those strong boys. But where was my scheming? Where was my Larys? Listeners, I just got to say this up front. I didn't get to watch this episode live. So what did that mean? That meant I saw so many people on social media talking about how this wasn't just the best episode ever of House of the Dragon. They were saying it was the best episode of Game of Thrones property entirely. And so my expectations had sadly were built up real high. And for me, I came into this episode expecting to be blown away. And then it starts with scenes that handle exposition as well as they could. But that first scene, has to get rid of the exposition. Okay, Corliss is gone. He hasn't been around for 6 years. He's got this fever. Vaymond, who has been in a bunch of episodes, but we really don't know him as a character, so he's got to talk about his desires, his wants, where he's coming from. And then when we go to Dragonstone, we have to get caught up with these older versions of the kids in what Rhaenyra and Daemon have been up to. And they handled the exposition as well as they could, but it was like two scenes of exposition dumping right at the beginning. And that got me in a mood to where I was expecting the greatest episode of Game of Thrones ever, and I got a lot of exposition thrown at me and kind of characters like Vaemond, who I really just haven't had a chance to know yet. And so I think the talking that everybody's doing about Paddy Considine's acting as King Viserys, it is incredible. Those effects are incredible. That is very touching. Anybody who's seen grandparents or parents age, they know how painful this can be. And seeing King Viserys like that was painful. It was powerful, but it didn't soar for me. And so I'm only going to give it 7 out of 10. We didn't know Vaemond as a character. His death was shocking, a bit like his niece Lena's death a couple episodes ago was shocking, but because we don't know him, I don't feel the emotional punch. And then finally, as the hand of Team Green, or hashtag Team Greens, Team Green, what is it? Is it Green singular or Team Green plural? I've got to wonder, how much violence must Rhaenyra and her band of brutal thugs commit before everyone joins Team Green? First of all,
no,
the leader of violence against women, Daemon, kills his wife. Horrific. Then they kill some innocent dude just because he kind of looks like Lenore. That's two deaths on Team Black already, Team Rhaenyra already. Then, because of this plan of theirs, they not only have to make Corliss and Rhaenys think that their son has died, but they tell the kids, Jason, Luke, and Joffrey, that their dad is dead. Then, if there isn't enough blood on their hands, they kill Vaemond for what? Telling the truth, right? He was right. They aren't of his blood. Finally, they took a knife to the most sweet and innocent character's eye ever, in Aemond.
Mm.
And this brutal violence that Rhaenyra and her band of thugs keep doing, it hurts me as a Green. So Team Greens, or Team Green, plural, not plural, it's tough to watch this episode.
I can't find any way to disagree with you, Bubba. Yeah. Allison showed she's a true ally to all women in this episode.
next. So, and like, we don't have time to talk.
No notes, Bubba. Perfect.
Catfish, we can't talk about parts of the episode. That's in a different part of the podcast. This is our initial reaction. Why are you going off on something that isn't this part?
Okay. I'll wait until we get there. We might even have a match game question that will relate to it. But at that point, we'll talk about, Allison, hurt you.
No, listen. I'm sure we won't forget about it and not talk about that at all. Team Green, Catfish, because once again, I got sold that this was a great episode. And sadly, my expectations were way too high. I did reach out on our Twitter account at @DoublePHQ. That's the word double, single letter P for podcast, HQ for headquarters, and asked the listeners. I was like, what did you think of that episode of House of the Dragon? Did you want a toast to a strong episode? Did it put you to sleep? Aegon, did it cause you a splitting headache? Or are you hashtag dead? So only have 26 votes, but believe it or not, 65% call it a strong episode. Ooh, wonderful. Only 8% said it put them to sleep, but I think they just wanted to have a dragon dream about that. 15% said it caused them a splitting headache, and 12% said they're hashtag dead. So really,
that's still a quarter
really
of the audience that thought it was poor. I think this happens with all things that you watch. It was such a strong ending.
Yeah.
When you bring in the kids and they just are just full on beefing, I think it helped them forget all the exposition you were talking about. And maybe it's just their enthusiasm for the future, which is really the only reason I gave it as high a rating.
Well, talking about those kids, I do want to mention that two of the kids, adult Helena, or older Helena, however you want to refer to her, and older Aemond. We've talked about these actors before. They've been on a show we covered called The Last Kingdom. We've covered all five seasons here on Double P Podcast. Be sure to search our archives and we'll talk about that great show. Did you recognize them, Catfish? Did you recognize Ewan Mitchell, who on The Last Kingdom plays a very noble and pious character, young knight Osferth, who is the bastard son of King Alfred? Did you recognize him as the not quite as pious young or older Aemond?
Well, what's great about this is that, first of all, yes, on that show, he wasn't just that he was pious, mm-hmm. but that he was actually a real convincingly just sweet character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people loved him, and he was so nice, even though he was pious, not like Alfred, who was pious and you wanted to punch him.
Oh, yeah.
He was so sweet and such, and then he comes on here, and I got to admit, Bubba, I probably would have recognized him, but the second he came on, Ms. Catfish is like, hey, that's the guy from Last Kingdom, because right. Ms. Catfish loves Last Kingdom. We've probably rewatched it three or four times. Ms. Catfish is all in on Uhtred, if you know what I mean. The minute he went bathing in the pool in the first episode, Ms. Catfish was in for six seasons in a movie. He was great in this.
He was.
Like I say, so different. And that was part of my excitement to see him, because he was such a delightful prick. Not like his older brother, who's still just a surfer dude. Yes. Oh, man. God, you just reminded me of, you know, of the surfer dude's wife talking about how at the dinner table, how it's great when your husband ignores you. Oh, my God. That was so good.
Right. And that is played by an actress. I'm going to mispronounce her first name, but it's Fia Sabin, who appeared on the fifth season of The Last Kingdom as Lady Ethelfled's rebellious daughter, Aelfwyn.
And I didn't recognize her.
No. These pale wigs can really hide them pretty well, but so good. If you enjoy these Game of Thrones shows, I'm pretty sure you're going to love The Last Kingdom. It's on Netflix now. If you are looking for other great shows, as we've been mentioning, we've been covering Andor on Disney Plus, the Star Wars show, and you can find that on our Parsec Passion podcast feed. 1 week from tonight, this Sunday, coming Sunday, what is it? Here in the States, it's going to be, and around the world, it's going to be Sunday, October 16th. We're going to begin coverage of a new murder mystery show entitled Magpie Murders. Here in the United States, you can see it on PBS. Around the world, you can see it on BritBox. This is going to be a brilliant podcast because I've read the book. I know all the clues. I know who did it, if there were actually murders. And Catfish has not read the book and has no idea. So Detective Catfish is going to be solving this. We want you to join Detective Catfish on the case. So it's Magpie Murders. It's Sundays at 9 p.m. here in the United States on PBS. We know you guys are watching House of the Dragon then, but record Magpie Murders. Watch that, and then come join Detective Catfish. Solve this case. You're going to have a blast.
Oh, man, and I'll tell you this. I am the right person to have not read the books. Whenever I'm watching a show with Bubba, and he always solves the mystery. He's got all the clues down. I am at a complete loss when it comes to these kind of things. So definitely come on to enjoy it and also to feel superior to me.
We should mention that Magpie Murders stars an actor from the original Game of Thrones. If you loved Conleth Hill as the Spider Varys, he is on Magpie Murders. You're going to love him in that show with hair.
It's always strange. I've seen him now in a couple of shows. It is strange to see him with hair.
Well, hey. Once again, you can reach out to us on social media at WPHQ. That's Word Double, the single letter P for podcast, HQ for headquarters, at WPHQ, Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/WPHQ, YouTube. You leave those comments, and we know that the one favorite way you like to reach out is with our match game questions. Catfish, are you ready for match game question number one?
Oh, heck yeah, I am. Let's do it.
Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, but her next child will be blank. Princess Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, But her next child will be
triple nippled.
Now, why would you say that, Catfish?
Well, because this is a product of incest, and we know when you start to interbreed a little too closely, you start to get some defects.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a defect. If one of our listeners has an extra nipple, congratulations.
Right. Or if your uncle's your dad, that's so cool, too.
I just like the alliteration to it.
Oh, okay. Hey, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Her three existing children are strong, but her next child will be his own cousin. Pretty good, huh? He will be.
That is very good and also very disturbing.
Well, hey, that's our answers. Let's see if our listeners can match. Are you ready, Catfish?
Oh, my goodness, Bubba, gracious.
We have so many answers.
Oh, man. People were engaged last night. This is my favorite game. Our listeners are funnier and smarter than us and handsomer than at least one of us.
We have so many answers. And I just saw the first one is making me laugh. From Hamlet is Dead. You ready? Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, but her next child will be
blonde.
Ouch, that just cuts too close to the bone. Okay, here's one from our good buddy Dooley's left legs. Rhaenyra's three children are strong, but her next child will be
strongly inbred.
Oh no. Now I just saw our good buddy Jack Klompas's answer. Okay, you ready? Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, but her next child will be
a fire crotch.
What? That's not right.
Who is that? Is that Lara? Who is it? Who's red? We'll have to find out.
That is from our good double L, Jack Klompas, who's at BTMac11 on Twitter.
We should note in addition that Dooley's left legs says that Mrs. Dooley also said blonde. So now we have listeners matching with listener significant others. That is just a great bell.
Wonderful work, Mrs. Dooley's left leg. Love it. Who do you want to read next, Catfish? Are you ready? You read some answers. You ready? Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, but her next child will be
a prince. And he put a picture in as our boy Matt Smith as the prince.
That's pretty good. It doesn't match anything, but that's a pretty good answer. All right.
Now, some of these I think are kind of in the same spirit. They're not exactly the same. I mean, strongly inbred. That's what I was implying. So we got another one. Bubba, go ahead and read it.
All right. Three existing children are strong, but Rhaenyra's next child will be
a factory reject.
Not nice.
That is Corey Bramblett at TCBPOV. Oh, my God.
All right. Her next child will be
an egg. I think it's because she had sex with a dragon. That is Holly at Hutpants. So good.
All righty. Okay. Here's Double M Matt Burdick has an answer. The next child will be
No one cares. Everyone is concentrating on the strong boys.
Okay, now that's a bit too true, Matt Murdock. Come on.
Oh, come on. All right, and here we go. Her next child will be number 6. Tori Hunter reminded me. You know what? I put out the question too early, and we found out she had a bevy of them.
Is that right? Yeah. Wait, is it
well,
right?
Because there is.
There's Jace.
For the first
there's
time.
No, you're right. There's Jace, there's Luke, there's Joffrey, then there's Aegon the Younger, then there's Viserys the Younger, and then this one will be 6. This is incredible.
Exactly. I thought there'd been another time jump when she showed the kid. I was like, she's not pregnant anymore. She had the baby, and then she showed another one, and then she was still pregnant. So I was like, all right, I guess we didn't do a time jump. I mean, we did do a time jump, and we missed something.
She's going to be the Brady Bunch. All right. Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, but her next child will be?
Legitimate. That's Nick Fortuna, Nicholas Fortuna. Nick, I would not say that around Damon.
No. Don't say that at all. Rhaenyra's next child will be?
Much less likely to bully Aemond.
Who said that? That's brilliant.
That's Fists of Bucho, our old buddy Bucho. So good.
Bucho, hey, let me take a time out here. Bucho, aren't you down in New Zealand? Catfish always talks about moving to New Zealand. I want to visit. Bucho, thank you so much for that great answer. How many more we got? Her next child will be a double D.
Oh, a double D.
Damon Demon.
Oh, yeah. That is from Revere Terry. Bubba, yep. Get the bell ready.
All right, I'm ready.
Her next child will be inbred. That's at Jeff Perro, J-E-P-H-P-E-R-R-O. Oh, my God. And Dula's left neck, notice he matched. And then we've got, I think we've got another match here, Bubba.
Let's hear it. Her next child will be?
His own cousin.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. There you go. That is word for word what I put.
That's Endless Mike 03. Right. So good.
Now, do we have one more from Likely Seth? I think this is it.
Holy cow, I missed
all right.
That. We've got so many. Go ahead, read it out.
Rhaenyra's three existing children are strong, but her next child will be Triple B.
Triple B?
Bouncing blonde baby.
Oh, there we go. We got another match. Oh, man, we got some good matches here. I love it. I love it.
That is incredible. Listeners, we do this every week on our Twitter account at DoublePHQ. You do not have to be funny. That's Catfish and I are proving. You don't have to come up with a funny answer.
That's right.
But we do want to hear from you. Look at all these great answers. This, you know, we came up with this match game idea, I think about 2 hours before we decided to try to do it. And you guys impress us so, so much.
So good. We love our listener feedback. All right, Bubba. Well, all right. Now,
speaking of strong children.
Oh,
it's time for the strongest scene, Catfish.
Bubba, also, well, I have to promote myself a little bit. Made that strong joke in the match game question before I knew that that was going to be so important later on. I presaged the taunting, and I'm very proud of myself. So, yes. Okay. So let's go to the
I think that's because you think so much like Eamon, dear. You're in the same mind space as young Eamon.
Well, I did have LASIKs on one eye. Like Eamon, I've got one eye that's stronger than the other.
All right, for me, I'll go first on the strongest scene of the episode. And I'm not going to pick the scene that actually shocked me the most. Once again, listeners, I have read Fire and Blood, so I have a general idea of where the story's going. And everybody who's read that book knows that this tale does take some twists and turn the TV version from the book version. But the scene that shocked me the most was Mysyria. She's back in the story. I was like, hey, look who's back. It's Mysyria. And not only is she back, she's got a spy in the castle, Talia. Oh, snap. I loved that surprise. I love that twist. If that's from the book, somehow I don't remember it, but I think it is new for the show. And I loved that twist. It really got me excited.
Well, Bubba, I didn't know whether she's still involved with Daemon or is she doing her own thing? Because it really feels like Daemon has not been playing games.
No.
Ever since he got shut down by his niece and then not shut down.
Right. You know, getting rejected by your niece will set you straight. This is a great question. Before I actually mention my strongest scene of the episode, what do you think, any idea where that storyline could go? What is she just a secret keeper for her own sake? Do you think Mysyria has a side in this multi-sided war?
Well, I'm still not sure. They didn't really give us a lot of information about her, even when she was with Daemon. So,
right.
We were left, I think, to assume some things about her that proved to be absolutely incorrect. So I can't even guess where she's going now.
I can't guess either. Listeners, because I think this isn't in the books, I think you guys can write us. I know she sometimes is called the White Worm, and I know she does pop up a bit, but this shocked me. Listeners, write to us and let us know. But for me, for the strongest scene, there's only one answer. For me, it's a moment, and that is when Eamon decided to blow up the peace. This is a guy who saw a peace treaty and ripped it to shreds. So Eamon, is it the fact, and maybe this is me being too clever or the show trying to be too clever, is the fact that, okay, a pig is placed in front of him. I think it's Lucerys is looking at the pig, maybe thinking of the pink dread, and that sets Eamon off. but Amund with his toast to my healthy nephews, three strong boys, ice cold. Amund, you get my strongest scene of the episode. It literally destroyed the peace talks and was incredible.
Well, Bubba, I mean, that was an amazing moment.
Yeah.
But I have to say, that entire scene, the entire scene was tense from the very beginning. We've got his older brother talking smack.
Yep.
And then one of the strong boys decides to do a little dancing.
With his wife, right?
Yeah.
With Aegon's wife. So, yeah. Holy.
It was, the whole thing was tense to me.
Helaena's toast. You're about to be married soon. It isn't too bad. Mostly he just ignores you, unless he's drunk. Man, Helaena gonna give the toast at the wedding? Ouch.
Just record the same thing. I mean, I think she already found the perfect, it's the sweet spot, really. The entire scene was amazing. It reminded me of the scene in the previous episode with the fight that led into the whole group thing. Mm-hmm. It's just electric here. And, you know, I was saying I'm for the open warfare. Part of the reason why this is delicious is that it's not full open warfare, but I am team next generation.
Any close calls for you, Catfish? I can imagine a lot of people would love the scene of Viserys's long, slow march to the throne and how for his daughter, for his family, he somehow pulled himself together. I think it was great that he did it. I still was thinking, as just a viewer, it is completely fine for you to be carried to that throne, dude. You do not have to make it on your own. But I know a lot of people love Daemon picking up his brother's crown and putting it on his head. There's a rumor going around that was just like an accident on the set where his crown fell off. And Matt Smith did it, and so it was a great improv, and they said, oh, kept that in. Any other scenes where you're like, yeah, that is a super strong scene?
No, that was a great scene. It would just would have been a great scene I would have enjoyed it is after that whole thing was over, then we had to watch him walk all the way back. And then back all the way back to his room, up the stairs.
Oh, man, up those everything. Stairs, yeah. This isn't what I would call a favorite scene. Mm-hmm. But it was a scene that I wondered what it was getting, why it was there, and what it was trying to get across. After Vaemond has lost his top, after he lost his top, it's like the equivalent of an autopsy for Vaemond. And Rhaenys is in there and she's watching it. This is her brother-in-law. This is somebody who she went against up there in the throne room when they all had their petitions. But she is watching her brother-in-law's autopsy and half his head is gone. Why was that scene there? What do you think is going through Rhaenys' head right now?
Well, as long as it's not Daemon's sword, I'd say she's ahead of the game.
Okay. All right. Maybe I walked into that one. But do you want to try to answer it seriously before we come up with some more silliness? For me, I was wondering, is she having second thoughts? She does, even though it's incorrect, she does think Rhaenyra and Daemon killed her son. She does think getting involved with them, even getting involved with them has in a lot of ways led to the death of her two children. So part of me was wondering, I made my bed and now I have to lie in it by watching my brother-in-law's destroyed body. That's what I thought. I'm reading into it, but.
Yeah, I really do think that that's interesting. However, I think if she had thought about it, it was clear she was going to get embroiled in this fight, too.
Oh, yeah.
So if she's going to pick the boys, she's going to go team strong. It's better that Vaemond is gone for her. She increasingly seems like she just doesn't want trouble. You know, she wanted trouble enough to say, no, Vaemond, that's not what the Sea Snake wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now she doesn't have to deal with his shenanigans.
Okay, do we want to talk about, because I have seen some dust up online about this, about the way that young Aegon, or no, he's the Aegon the Elder, excuse me, compared to Aegon the Younger, or Aegon the Second, however we want to refer to him, his sexual assault was handled by his mother, or do we want to not touch on that sensitive subject because we're a silly podcast? I'll go either way. What do you think?
There's a lot of discussion about the way that women are handled in this show. It is a show about a less enlightened time. I think the point of that scene is to show where Alicent has gone. There is sort of a mirroring to what happens the night after Rhaenyra has her fun with incel Kristen Cole. So there is a parallelism going on there. And now she, you know, seemed to be kind of a hopeful before, and now she's being more practical and cold.
I think that is a great call. Certainly Viserys had a child who he didn't trust, and so he had to give tea to, and Alicent has this child she can't trust at all. And I almost don't want to say anything other than it was a horrific scene. It reinforces how Aegon shouldn't be the heir in any way. Now, Aemond probably should. Team Green. How you like them apples? I'll never leave Team Green.
Yeah, they're green apples, all right.
Yes, but what flavor was that tea? Hello, transition. That'll get us to match game two. Catfish, are you ready for match game two?
Love it. All right. So this wasn't the only tea in the episode. No. Apparently, our boy, even though they called it, you know, they said it was milk of the poppy, I think Viserys actually referred to it as his tea.
Yep.
So, all right. So the question is, the only thing that tea isn't used for in King's Landing is blank.
Boom, ba, ba, boom, boom.
All right, Bubba, read the question and I'll give my answer.
Okay, the only thing that tea isn't used for in King's Landing is
the nesty plunge. Other than that, it solves, fixes,
it does.
Medicates, dulls. It's basically, you know, when you imagine those old movies, it's handy elixir. It does everything.
Ask your doctor if tea is right for you. Ask your maester if tea is right for you.
And the answer will always be yes.
I mean, oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. So, all right, you ready? This was a tricky one for me, but I it may not be funny, but I'm very happy with my answer.
Okay, right. Well, look, that's all that matters. The only thing that tea isn't used for in King's Landing is
solving the never-ending trouble at the Stepstones. I mean, for God's sakes, it's been like 30 years at the Stepstones. It is still not solved. Get some tea down there. Good grief. Like, this show's gonna end. And, you know, whoever is on the throne in, after 50 years of time jumps, it's gonna be like, and yes, now I'm the king. Yeah. King, we got trouble on the Stepstones. Oh, my God. Dang.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia and stay away from the Stepstones.
I mean, oh, my goodness. Oh, my God.
All right, Bob, I'm going to read the question, and you read some of these amazing answers we have. The only thing that tea isn't used for in King's Landing is
actually helping humans heal. That's Hamlet is dead on Twitter. So good. Oh, my goodness. So many great answers.
They do not believe in health. All right. The only thing that tea isn't used for in King's Landing is
the fluid to sire all kinds of babies and bastards. You know, Dooley, I'm not so sure. It's like, well, you're having trouble siring bastards and babies. I got a tea for that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bubba. I like Dooley's answer. I'm just not sure it's right. All right, we'll keep going. The only thing the tea isn't used for in King's Landing is
a relaxing break. Tea break. That's Corey Bramblett at TCB POV on Twitter. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. That one is great. Yeah, you're right. The tea is always more than just tea. All right, the only thing the tea isn't used for in King's Landing is
healing the poor king.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, you ring the bell.
I will. That's Harley Camille at Harley Camille on Twitter.
Matched with Hamlet is dead. I love it.
I know. This is incredible. Okay, so You read Double Adam's answer, and I'll give you the setup. The only thing T isn't used for in King's Landing is?
A colt.
That's right. They can't cure that. Oh, so many good ones. The only thing T isn't used for in King's Landing is?
To denote a time of day. And then it's tea time.
Very good. Very good.
Golf 300 mandatory.
Okay. I'll do this one. The only thing T isn't used for is Triple D.
Triple D?
Dunking Dragon Donuts. Oh, very good. That's your old buddy Bit Bucho at Fistabucho's. Oh, man. We love. Oh, no. I saw likely Seth's answer, so I'll read this one as well. The only thing T isn't used for in King's Landing is keeping people's eyes in their heads.
Oh, man.
Oh, likely Seth. Oh, my God. Not good at all. Oh, my goodness. And I see one more from our good buddy at Nicholas Fortuna. You want to read this one, Catfish?
Yeah,
you ready?
The only thing that T isn't used for in King's Landing is eye drops. Oh, I ring the bell.
Terrible. Now, did we get them all? We have so many answers.
I think we got them all.
But oh my goodness.
Seth match with Nick Fortuna. This is so good.
So wonderful. Okay, Catfish, it's time for our character look at the episode. Mm-hmm. And this was a great episode because so many characters were together. Mm-hmm. There's another podcaster, famous podcaster, much more famous than we are, Joanna Robinson, who's currently podcasting for The Ringer. And she put out a tweet who was like, you know, some people say there's no one to root for on House of the Dragon. And she said, the kids. And admittedly, the kids she were showing were Rhaenyra's kids and the kids Daemon had with Elaena, the two girls who are now engaged to their cousins, I think is how they're, well, also stepbrothers. So anyway.
His family tree is just a bush.
But my question to you is, as we talk about characters on House of the Dragon, is do you feel you have a good handle on Daemon and Lena's two daughters, who we've seen a lot of, but do you feel like you have a good handle on them as characters? And then also Rhaenyra's kids, admittedly Joffrey's real young and Aegon the Younger and Viserys the Younger are pretty much toddlers, but do you have a good feel for who Jace and Luke are as characters, Catfish? So that's who another podcaster says, that's who you should be rooting for. Those are the good guys so far in this fight. But do you feel like you know them as characters? Because I... And a thought on Twitter, those are some of the least developed characters in the show.
I agree. And it's funny because I feel like more and more we're supposed to be rooting for everybody but Team Green. And yet we're not seeing enough of them.
Right.
My dominant feeling about the kids is the strong kids is that they thought they hit doubles, but it turns out they were both born on third base. So basically they don't deserve any of the stuff they're getting. I think you are making a mistake if you're making characters too nice and not giving us enough information and then at the same time giving us great evil characters. I mean, I don't know whether it was the actor change or what, but I was all for Aemond's death last episode. And now I think I'm Team Aemond.
Heck yeah. Well, how about
this? Happened to me last week too, Bubba, where I felt like I was being pushed to go more towards Rhaenyra's side, and that actually pushed me away from her side. So it's funny, I'm getting further away from Rhaenyra and the Strongs and
Team
more
Green.
Towards
Team Green.
Team Evil.
You say Team Evil, but let's look at Helena. Helena has not really been in these episodes a whole lot either, but her characterization has been so strong. They've given her strong. I've got to come up with a different word. Her characterization has been so finely detailed and specific. You know, she's the one who's been playing with bugs. She's the one in this episode where she, you know, probably only has three lines in the whole episode, but one of them, she's dissing her husband in a toast. So because they've given her that specificity, you know her better than Bela and shoot, I'm going to forget the other child of Lena, but they just haven't given them those moments yet. And Jace, I think it's Jace who's trying to learn Valyrian in this one. And Luke, who in the last episode was like, I don't want Driftmark. If I get it, that means everybody's dead. You know, they have given him that those moments, but I don't know if they've really developed those two kids, Jace and Luke, enough to say other than, you know, they seem okay. No, I feel bad for them because everybody's staring at them because they're obviously not Laenor's kids. But, you know, they are giving the best characterizations to the Greens so far, it feels like.
Well, maybe it's just easier. Maybe,
well, again, Helena's not evil. Right.
But it is easier to show lots of evil in a short period of time rather than kind of like a rounded character.
Okay. And Helena's got her, I guess, quirkiness, which helps her stand out, which they haven't given to the other girls. Or, you know, Jace and Luke don't have that one kind of quirk about them yet either. So
boring.
Team Greed always. Yes. Okay. The other characters in this episode, once again, I felt like we didn't really know Vaemond before he lost his top. Any thoughts on the late great Vaemond and his performance or anything?
Well, it kicks things off, but it wasn't really necessary to have all this drama with Vaemond. Like you said, we had to do some exposition about the sea snake, and then we had to have Vaemond say, I've got to do it, and then he's got to get his head cut off. But in the end, what does that have to do with the fight that we're about to have? The only thing that it maybe does is involved the queen that wasn't, but it feels like she could have been involved anyway.
That's so true.
In other words, like, you know, it's hard to set up this an obstacle and have us care so much about it when it gets resolved, when it gets brought up and resolved in the same episode. There's no time for us to sit with like, oh, how is this going to affect things? So it's another reason why, you know, it felt like there's been a lot of Sturm und Drang here that adds up to nothing when we could have gone forward. Don't care much about him. I also like that, you know, we seem to really have de-emphasized the incel Kristen Cole in this one.
He hasn't been around much in this one or the last one. He wasn't really around much. I mean, he was there, but he wasn't doing much.
I mean, we just see it so that we could see that Aemond is presumably good with a sword. We don't know how much Kristen Cole is pulling his punches or his swings. I mean, if it was me, I'd go for his blindside. That's just me. No Kristen. We've gotten more complicated.
No Laris.
With Alicent. We see a little bit with her.
Not much with Otto in this episode.
No, almost nothing with Otto. It feels almost as if we do see him on the big throne, which I was a little surprised to see, but I guess it makes sense that it would be him and not Alicent. First of all, he's a man. He's the hand of the king. But it feels like he is kind of got what he needs, right? Because he's gotten Alicent to start making moves.
This may, this show is tricky with this, but this may be our last chance to really talk about King Viserys as a character. Mm-hmm. We had 8 episodes of him, and I do feel we really got to know him as a character. Any final thoughts? I don't want to speak too quickly, but it feels like final thoughts on King Viserys.
I mean, I feel about him the way I have from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was more frustrated for a while for it than I am now, just realizing this is the way he was. Seems like a fairly good dude, just not fit to be a king. And so there it is. Maybe he was too good to be the king. You know, this is what this might have. It's an interesting point to think of. You know, people are always like, whoa, how would have Game of Thrones had been if Ned Stark had become king?
Right.
Maybe he would have been too weak. Probably not. He seemed to have a good head on his shoulders. He seemed to have his eye on the prize, unlike Viserys did near the end there.
Well, so, is it possible? Let me throw out a pitch. Is it possible that under different circumstances, Viserys really would have been a good king? If his brother, for example, had not been the piece of work that Daemon was, and he could have just left his brother as his heir until he had a son, wouldn't that have resolved almost everything? Like he pulled
I feel like
the heir away from Daemon because Daemon was just not fit to be heir.
This isn't a decorative modern day royalty. He had to make real decisions, mm-hmm. and at almost every time, I mean, even with the Stepstones, he didn't make the right decisions. Rhaenyra had to go in there. Daemon had
That's
to go
true.
In there. He
That's
just
true.
He just was not sure. Would he have been a good king for complete peacetime? Yes. Was there ever peacetime in the kingdom? No.
All right. Hey, listeners, if this is our final episode with Viserys, how do you feel about his reign over these 8 episodes? And who knows how many years with all the time jumps we've done? Write down in the comments on YouTube. Give us a like if you're on YouTube, please. We always need likes on tweets and on YouTube and those sort of thing. If you're tweeting at us at PHQ, tell us what you think about King Viserys. If you like those kids that we felt were a bit nondescript, you know.
Hey, Bob.
We don't care if our opinion is not the right opinion. It's just our opinion, and we care about your opinion. Sorry, Catfish, go.
I have a double C for you.
Wait, a double? Oh, no.
Yeah, Catfish question.
I knew that one. Okay.
So,
yeah.
How do you interpret Alicent's reaction to what Viserys says at the end of the episode?
It is very difficult for us as an audience to wrap our head around this because we understand the context. But if you heard Aegon, Aegon, you're the one who can unite the kingdoms, you can do it. I would think that's it. I would think he's saying, Aegon, you're the one, you're my son. Again, there is no context for it. I say with modern eyes, I could see, oh, this could just be the rambling of somebody about to leave this mortal coil. But if I'm Alicent and I heard him say my oldest boy's name multiple times, and he says, you know, we need to, sorry, I even have the actual quote here. Let me see who, you know. Okay, so he says, the prince who, Aegon, Aegon, the prince who was promised against the cold and the dark, you are the one. You must do this. You must do this. No more, no more, my love. I am emotional. It's my husband, even if he's a creepy crypt keeper. He's my husband who's dying. I think you would think, okay, he's finally come to the realization that it's got to be his son. And what's funny is he's always thought it was his son. That's why he kept trying to have sons so much. But I think Alicent is going to take this as, in my husband's dying words, he finally saw the light. It should be our son, Aegon, ruling. That's how I would take it.
All right, even though she knows Aegon, not fit to rule unless he gets slapped around a little.
Right. I thought that his horrificness with that woman who was working there in the Red Keep, I thought that was almost why she was able to say later in the episode, Rhaenyra, you'll be a good queen, because she's like, this son of mine is pathetic. Mm. But there's also the side of a mother is always going to defend her son. If I thought that was the dying words of the king, I could see how that would be interpreted.
Right.
Once again, as a modern person, I would think, oh, this is just rambling, but I'm not a modern person. I'm in a person who I'm in a, you know, and he was rather lucid earlier, right? He was lucid at dinner. He was lucid in the throne room.
Yeah,
so if he says
this,
drugged
him up. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, even
okay.
when he says my love, I was waiting for him to say Emma again, but I assume that's what he was talking about, even though he didn't say it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that would have been, if he had said Emma again, then I would have been fine if she said, okay, pull the cord, unplug him. Hey, Catfish.
Yeah.
It is time for, you know what, Match Game 3.
I love it. All right, okay. Here it is, Bubba.
Let's hear it.
Aggravating Aemond is so aggravating.
How aggravating is he?
At family dinners, he always makes sure to blank. All right, Bubba.
You ready? I've got my answer. I want to go first. So,
all right.
Aggravating Aemond is so aggravating. At family dinners, he always makes sure to cut the bologna.
Oh.
You like that? He's cutting the bologna. He's calling them strong boys strong. Way to go. Team Green, Team Greens.
Love it.
Hey, okay. I'll set you up. You ready? Aggravating Aemond is so aggravating. At family dinners, he always makes sure to
give everyone the evil eye.
At family dinners, at family breakfasts, when he's walking through the castle.
This is how I would reply to him if he kept saying strong. Yeah. I would have said, well, you know what? You really put your eye on the problem here. I mean, with such good vision, I would have just kept needling him. All right, Bubba, I'm going to read the question. You read some answers.
All right.
Amond is so aggravating. At family dinners, he always makes sure to
take off his eye patch and freak people out. Wait, he's taken after his father. Oh, isn't that great? That's Corey Bramblett at TCB POV. Very, very good. Here, let me read Dooley. Boy, everybody's giving the same answers. This is so great. Amond is so aggravating. At family dinners, he always makes sure to eye up the serving girls.
Oh.
Well, that's kind of Aegon's thing, but I like that as well. Very good.
Yeah, sure, Dooley's
left legs. You read a couple. You ready?
Yeah.
Aggravating Amond. At family dinners, he always makes sure to
keep an eye out for the family. Oh, yeah, I love it.
These are all matching.
They're all pretty close. Nick Fortuna at Nicholas Fortuna. All right, Bubba. Aggravating Amond is so aggravating. At family dinners, they always make sure to
talk politics.
Oh, the worst.
You never do that at family dinners. But that's at Patman23. So for being so truthful and so true to the show, I appreciate that one so much. All righty. Aggravating Amond is so aggravating. At family dinners, he always makes sure to quadruple E.
Quadruple E?
Eye each enemy evilly.
Oh, that is so good. Defis and Buccio. I love it. These aren't exactly matches, but everyone, you know, you said you have one where people go on the same theme and they're just doing it beautifully. All right. Oh, I've got to have this one. Okay. Aggravating Amond is so aggravating.
Yeah.
At family dinners, he always makes sure no one feels isolated.
Oh, wait, no. That is true match game 78 type
that
fun. Who did that one? That's great.
That likely Seth.
Oh, that is a groaner. These are all, wonderfully groaners. All right. Hamlet is dead. At family dinners, aggravating Amond is always sure to get all eyes on him.
I love it. All right, here we go. Let's see about this one. Terrence Revere. He always makes sure to keep an eye out for trouble. Oh, this one is along the same lines as Patman 23, and is, if there's anything worse than talking politics at family dinners, I would always make sure to talk about doing CrossFit.
Ugh. I would leave Team Green if that were true.
Endless Myco 3. I love it.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
We got one more here. One weird.
Okay.
Aggravating Amond is so aggravating. At family dinners, they always make sure to double T.
Wait, double T?
Yeah, toast truculently.
Hey, all right. As long as it's not an eye pun, we love it. Who's that from?
So good. That's Tori Hunter at Mandatory. Holy cow. It's so good. I mean, the politics and the CrossFit, so good.
Oh my God. We're too close to Thanksgiving to talk about those two things. I'll talk about my steps. How many steps have I got in today?
Oh my God.
Hey. All rise. Enter the small council chamber for the small council debate, where the small council debates important matters in the Seven Kingdoms. The first on the docket today. Counselors, let's hear your petition on issue 1. Was Vaemond right? Did he deserve to be named heir of Driftmark? Counselor Catfish, you always go first. So, Counselor Bubba, let Catfish go first. Ah, okay. Counselor Catfish.
Your Honor.
Yes.
I hate to make a plea for the patriarchy here. But this is also a matter of blood, Your Honor.
Blood.
Yeah, blood.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not saying that Driftmark doesn't need a strong leader. They just don't need a leader named Strong, Your Honor. I think that Vaemond is the one who has the connection, Your Honor. These bums don't even know how to speak Valyrian, Your Honor, and they don't have a connection to the sea. No, Your Honor, Vaemond deserved to be named heir of Driftmark.
Yes.
Your Honor, I would like to argue against that. And I would say that here in King's Landing, if I adopt a young street urchin off the street and I pull him in to my family, is he not part of my family just because he's not part of my blood? I pulled this kid in off the street. He was like, I have a home. And I'm like, shut up, kid. Get in here and work in my shop. And he's like, I want to go home to my family. I went, no, you're working here now. Shut up. Get down in the get in the basement. Do this work or you'll never leave. If you want to see the sun again, never leave. So is it wrong that I adopted this kid and put him down in the basement and put him to work? So that kid deserves Driftmark. Wait a minute, Your Honor. I've got completely off track.
Your Honor, I believe Counselor Bubba made my case. Also, I believe Counselor Bubba's been working too long for Team Green, Your Honor.
But Your Honor, hold on. I was a little too personal in my answers, Your Honor. I think that adopted children are still part of the family and do deserve the acceptance. In this world where the rules are the firstborn male heir, it doesn't say firstborn trueborn heir. I know it really does say that, but let's pretend it doesn't say that for a bit. I would say that give Luceris a chance, Your Honor.
Rebuttal, Counselor Catfish.
Do I really need to, Your Honor?
Your Honor, hold on. Vaemond is a second son. He is a second son.
Well, isn't Luceris a second son? He's the younger brother to Jace.
Your Honor, yes, but there's this special circumstance where Jace is going to be the king, and so therefore Luceris is the rightful inheritor. Your Honor, I didn't make these rules.
Counselor Catfish, final comment.
Yeah, Your Honor, I would just like to submit for evidence the entirety of Bubba's case. Everything that he pleaded, I would like to submit that. I would like to call his testimony as hostile testimony, Your Honor, but already put what he said in the record. I don't need no further questions.
Your Honor, I would like to submit this half a head into evidence.
Bailiff, go get it.
It's me, Bailiff Rusty. Bailiff Rusty is back. This is incredible. What a callback. Listeners, if you haven't heard some of our podcast from years ago, you may not remember Bailiff Rusty, but he was always so good.
Quiet, Counselor Bubba. Next question. Were the warm moments between Queen Alicent and Princess Rhaenyra real? Or an act, Counselor Catfish.
Your Honor, I would like to spend this time talking about not only how much I admire and revere Counselor Bubba,
but
also that I find him a very, very, very attractive man, and I try to model my entire life after him.
Truthful.
So, Your Honor,
yes.
Just how every single word I said there was complete and utter bullshit. That's exactly
hurtful.
The attitude that Alicent had when she said those words to Rhaenyra.
Your Honor,
go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to submit some video evidence. Look at the smile on Counselor Catfish's face right now. He is so happy that he called me handsome and honest. And look, he's even laughing now of joy, which shows how that is a real moment. Well, where Counselor Catfish might be truly Team Green, Team Aemond right now, Your Honor, I think these two, like Counselor Catfish and I, used to be best friends. So the fact that they had a warm connecting moment at that dinner where there was actual laughter, actual smiles. You cannot fake a smile because everybody knows when you real smile, your eyes respond. And if you got a fake smile, your eyes don't respond and it's creepy. So therefore, those were real smiles. It wasn't an act. Queen Alicent and Princess Rhaenyra did have a good moment together, Your Honor.
Rebuttal, Counselor Catfish.
Oh, Your Honor, did I mention not only the all the amazing words of wisdom that Counselor Bubba has given me over the years that I've followed, and each one of those words of wisdom he's given me has improved my life, not incrementally, Anna, but in major, major ways.
Your laughter is hurtful. Your Honor, I would like to propose a toast to my healthy friend, my strong friend, bastard of friendship, Catfish. And if you think this toast is real, to hell with you, can't judge.
Wait, separate them. It's me, Bailiff Rusty, separate them right now. All right, we are supposed to be serious for two questions and then silly for one question. These two counselors can never do it. So, final question. Should King Viserys' funeral be a closed casket or a burned casket and the ashes spread out to sea hundreds of miles from the coast or where anyone could see his scriptkeeper face? I could lose my tongue or top my head for saying that case, but Counselor Catfish, what are your thoughts?
Your Honor.
Yes.
It's very simple. This is a world somewhat like our own, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Just like in our world, they have different celebrations. They have religion. They have marriages. Yeah. They have other celebrations. So obviously, just like in our world, they must have holiday festivals. Celebrate different times of the year. And this time of the year, Your Honor, is Halloween.
Oh, no.
And Your Honor, if we could take the still rotting body of the king and put him on my front yard, Your Honor, I would have the best Halloween display in the neighborhood. So, Your Honor, I don't think it should be a closed casket. I don't think it should be sent away. I think they should save him for their version of Halloween.
Counselor Bubba, do you want to answer that?
Your Honor, I hope Bailiff Rusty has his manacles ready to take away that evil counselor who was saying those terrible things about our king, Viserys. But what do we know from Targaryen funerals back in the very first episode of House of the Dragon? It's not a closed casket. It's an open pyre where a dragon waits for someone to say Dracarys, and then ashes to ashes, King Viserys. Now, Your Honor, the problem we've had is that some of the dragons have seen King Viserys and flown away in terror. So we need a dragon strong enough that won't be creeped out by the creepy monster that it's about to see. When we find that dragon, Your Honor, we will burn his grace in memorial. So I say dragon fire. And what you do with those ashes after they're gone, you do put them out to sea. You put them as far, you put them in the stepstones where he wanted to go his whole life.
Terrible. Counselor Catfish, any other thoughts?
Your Honor, King Viserys was the king of the people, and there's nothing more that he would enjoy than children taking little pieces of candy bars and mini candy out of his eye socket, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I'd think many children would be afraid to approach that house. It's called trick or treat, not what the fuck? Okay, so
for using bad language and getting us demonetized on YouTube, Counselor Catfish wins and Counselor Bubba loses.
Your Honor, how could you? It's me, Bailiff Rusty. I knew I had a friend here. There we go.
Case is closed.
Wow. Court cases never stay serious. We're trying so hard to tackle serious questions. Hey, do you have an opinion on this? Do you think Vaemond actually did have a right? Did he get killed for telling us the truth? Go down on the YouTube comments, tweet at us, let us know what you think on Facebook.com/WPHQ. Leave your comments on this podcast episode. We want to hear from you. And we have some great feedback, so let's get to it right now, Catfish. Do you want to talk about Seth's feedback on Facebook?
Seth Bell says, I blame the king. His weakness and indecisiveness brought us here. I believe I've stated earlier in this episode and in all other episodes, I am Team Seth Bell on this one.
Oh, wow.
His spineless leadership has brought us to this point.
Ouch.
But I'm happy to be at this point. Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm thrilled we're finally here.
We got some feedback on last week's episode and this week's episode on Twitter. On this week's episode, one of our podcast hosts, Mork, where you been? Mork gave us some feedback. He said, House of the Dragon, the recent episodes are better despite having these time jumps. But Mork says the Offspring are just not interesting to me at all. He continues and he writes, I really like seeing the king disintegrate. Wish we'd gotten more of that, but I don't like the bedside misunderstanding. It's varies Three's Company or Kobe Bryant.
Oh boy.
He's been waiting to make these crummy jokes like we make all the time. That is Mork, who's at Extraordinary on Twitter.
Thank you for getting us demonetized and also ostracized from the entire Los Angeles area.
Yes. We got feedback on this episode from Dooley's Left Legs, who's, sure enough, at Dooley's Left Legs on Twitter, who gave this episode 9.5 quintuple E's.
Quintuple E's?
He wrote, eerie evil eyes existing everywhere. Whoa. Best episode of the season? Now, let me point out, when I said I saw a bunch of people saying this was a great episode, I actually didn't see Dooley's rating. But Dooley writes, it was the best episode of the season. Patty put in a stellar performance as an old decaying but still proud king. I completely agree with that. Dooley wrote, plenty of action, Damon's head slice being a highlight, and also the drama of infighting extended family. So you're right. Those are the great things. I didn't go up to 9.5, but I'm glad that you loved it.
Tori Hunter at Mando Tori said the episode was a quintuple S.
Wait, quintuple S?
Yeah, severed sea snake, salty sibling skull.
He was a salty sibling, and some of that salt spilled. Hey, this is somebody we haven't heard from a while, a great friend of the podcast, Shadowcat Bex, who's at Shadowcat_Bex on Twitter. She thought the episode was a Triple H.
Triple H?
Hacked half heads. We had corn half hands. Now we've got hacked half heads. Thank you. Oh, she's
and
great.
Likely Seth at Likely Whoa. Seth gives it 10 double E's.
10 out of 10 double E's?
Yeah. Empty eye sockets.
Yeah. We got a couple of those on this show.
Well, I'm only one now.
I'm so glad you guys love this episode. Hey, don't get frustrated if I wasn't there. Once again, I love that you guys loved it. Now, we did get feedback, as I mentioned, about episode 7 from our buddy at EndlessMike03, who thought episode 7 was fine with the darkness. He didn't have a trouble with it, and he was even streaming it. He said it wasn't nearly as dark or as bad for him as the Long Night episode of Game of Thrones. So that's interesting. And our good buddy at Patman23 also thought episode 7 was fine. He said it looked appropriately dark. It was dark, but not crazy dark for Patman. He says, I respect me going from a 10 out of 10 to an 8 out of 10. I won't try to convince you that the ending actually worked, but it did work for him. So I love hearing that. Glad to hear people love that episode.
Oh, man. And Harley Camille says, love the latest Rings of Power episode.
Oh, wow. Ooh,
crossing the streams. Yeah. I teared up several times. Sorry, Catfish and Bubba, but this is better than House of the Dragon, even Whoa. Though I'm still enjoying it. Okay. I'm much more connected to the Rings of Power characters. I have to say, I am not completely caught up on the Rings of Power, simply because for 3 episodes in a row, I had different people tell me, oh, this is the episode where it really kicks in. And someone told me about the 3rd episode. I watched it. It didn't kick in for me. 4th episode, some different person. 4th episode, didn't happen. 5th, different person. 5th episode, didn't happen. And I have to say, it's all spread out. Part of the thing that's a positive and a negative about House of the Dragon is there's fewer characters. So
even right.
though we don't get a lot of extensive stuff, I feel I'm more connected to these characters. But, you know, I'll have to, like, catch up on Rings of Power. But it's a shame that they have put these up against each other. There was
oh, yes,
real
the
need
worst.
To do that.
The worst.
I was listening to a podcast that talks about the business called The Town, which is a Ringer podcast, which is interesting. And they had people who were looking at the streaming numbers, and that House of the Dragon was doing better just simply on streaming numbers. So people who are, it doesn't count people who are watching it on cable. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. Did this podcast, or do you know offhand which platform, meaning HBO Max or Amazon Prime, which one has more people? Because there's a part of me that still thinks Amazon Prime, even though so many millions of people have Amazon Prime as a service, don't actually use the streaming part of it like they should.
Well, what they were saying was, is that, you know, part of the reason why they wanted to have a big show like this that would be a worldwide show is that there are a lot of places around the world where Amazon, where when people think of Amazon, the first thing they think of is streaming.
Oh, not wow. Like in America, wow, that's great.
Where the first thing we think about is shopping. There are, you know, looking at the worldwide numbers of people who actually use Amazon Prime, that's a good question. But I was still surprised that HBO streaming could do
better. Compete. Yeah. I want to say that while on this podcast about House of the Dragon, Catfish has a couple of times been, you know, brought up the fact that he hasn't been exactly thrilled with the Rings of Power. I want to say I don't talk about it much, but I actually find the show good. It's not great, but I do find it good. But there have been moments when I found the show almost magical. I believe it's episode 5 of Rings of Power. This is a bare small spoiler, but there's a moment that episode 5 I think begins with a song that these characters are singing on their journey. And I kind of thought, oh man, this is almost magical. Now, I do wish the plot had a bit more narrative momentum, but at times I felt that way about House of the Dragon too. So I still enjoy Rings of Power. I hope people are enjoying them both. But like you, Catfish, the idea that these series had to be released at the exact same time is ridiculous for both. I think both shows could be bigger if they weren't going at the same time.
Agree. So now we've got some YouTube feedback.
Love it.
From The Boys Can Swim. Oh. Dark, yet it looks like a Ronald Reagan 50s Western with daytime night scenes with a night filter. I mean, I just don't get it.
Man, these are obviously about episode 7. People still talking about The Dark. And The Boys Can Swim, I didn't experience it, but I feel terrible that you had that issue. Nick Fortuna gave us some YouTube feedback, and he called himself an APLL.
APLL?
Apple Podcast loyal listener.
Oh,
but he had to subscribe to the YouTube channel to show us some love. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. Also, thank you so much, Nick.
Nick Fortuna and our boy Bucho, who showed up. Man. Blood of my blood. I dig this show so dang much, but only because Bub and Catfish are the quadruple P.
Wait, quadruple P, Bucho?
Peerlessly perfect podcast partners.
Oh, heck yeah. Bucho, thank you so much. We're going to end this podcast the way we've been ending all our podcasts recently, where we look at your match game questions we didn't get to read on the air. So last week we had a best match game question. Leering Laris is so creepy. He looked at Queen Allison, not with a look of pride, but
a serial smile. And that serial spelled like a serial killer. So it's a double S, Corey Bramlett.
Very good. We also had this classic one where we wrote it so we would get some friggin' matches. We said there was an open bar at Lena's funeral. Rhaenyra and Daemon ordered
sex on the beach, obviously. Ding, ring the bell. So good. That is at Revere, Terry Terrence Revere. Yep.
Rhaenyra and Daemon ordered a whiskey glower is what our good buddy at Klaus Sons, Satan Claus, wrote. Whiskey glower. That's all Daemon orders. And our final answer, if Rhaenyra and Daemon ordered
vodka with a twist of incest. Always more than good with a twist. I prefer my vodka up, but that's just the way that it goes, some people.
I was going to say that's from at Harley Camille on Twitter. And I wrote back to Harley. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was more than a twist.
All right, and then our last one, Aemon took a dragon. Lucerys took an eye. But the episode was so dark, I thought blank took a blank. And Camille, Harley Camille, oh, says, man. GRRM took our souls.
He does that with all his work. That's true. We got a couple more. We had the episode was so dark, I thought Lenore took a dive into the fireplace.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted you to think at Revere Terry on Twitter. And oh no, this last one, here we go. The episode was so dark, I thought
a Dementor took a shit in a black hole. That is dark. That is so dark you couldn't tell anything. That is great, Aunt Mando Tori. Oh, also said Shades of the Longest Night. Holy cow.
Let me say, I had to ring the bell just because almost every answer last week featured the word crap. So the fact Tori Hunter seemed to get it back in, thank you so much. Hey, only two episodes left. Can you believe it, Catfish?
I can't. I can't believe we've only got two episodes, and then we'll only have one. Oh, no, we'll still have two podcasts left, Andor and the Magpie Murders.
That's right. So, listeners, get ready. If you're around the world and you have BritBox, you can watch episode one of Magpie Murders now. If not, get ready to join us on that podcast next week. And my name is Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I'm Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67 on Twitter. Your 67th favorite CJGman. But we will join you next time for the penultimate episode of season one of the Joffrey of Podcast.
I'm telling mother.